Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you, as we journey together through the strange curtains at a strange carnival and explore the mysteries together. If we have our minds blown, I'll help you clean it up. When I was a young man and I went to the movie theater, I would go to the Miracle Theater on Thomasville Road. It is no coincidence that this show is named Miracle Nutrition. Now, at that movie theater, there was a gentleman working there who would take your tickets. You'd get your tickets at the box office. It's not an office. It's so small. Is it a proper office? It's so little. They say, oh, the box office. Looks like a closet with a window. And then you'd get your ticket and you'd walk into the theater. And there was a gentleman and he'd take your ticket. And he would comment often on the movie you were about to see. He wore a jacket, a nice jacket. They made you wear that when you worked at the theater back then. You couldn't even have, I guess now they maybe have just a vest. They go, okay, just a vest. Soon it's just going to be a halter top. But then it was a blazer. I don't know, maybe he wore a tie that had the name of the chain of the movie theater on it. I don't know. He'd take your ticket and he would comment on what movie you were about to see. Not negatively. He'd just go, oh, that's a good one, or something like that. One time he said to me, oh, that Pee-wee's a strange one. True. That is not subjective. That is an objective statement. So he knew who buttered his bread. The butter robot. No, the people who, it's an expression, the people that paid his paycheck, and they were the movies. Years later, I was walking by what I thought was a carnival, and there was a man standing there on a platform, and the platform was on top of a sort of a gateway into a circus or a carnival, like I said. That's what I thought it was. And he was saying to the crowd, ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, very, very tiny old people, which is the reverse of that, I want you and I bid you to step forward if you dare. What you are about to see may change your life. The world is a dark and mysterious place, and from these dark and mysterious corners come the things of nightmares and dreams. Half angel, half devil. They are here to greet you, to change your world, to change your perspective. And I was spellbound. Who is this? I thought. Who is this? And then after I stood there for a few minutes, I thought, I'm not being beckoned into a sideshow. I'm being summoned into the grove, a place in Jewish mystical tradition where my mind will be blown by seeing the truth, the reality of the universe and of Godhead. Or he could be selling a vegetable slicer. That's a thing. You know, it could be, he could be all leading up to, you know, did you ever want to get your cucumbers like they are in a restaurant? And I thought, oh, I thought there was, is there a device they use? I thought they grew them that way or something, like baby carrots are carved. I didn't know that. Really young, because I grew carrots. And I go, that is not the shape of a baby carrot. And then I found out they put, I think, regular carrots through a machine to make them that shape and slimy. And they were originally conceived as something to be sold in seasonal Halloween stores as severed fingers. You're supposed to put them in a bowl with grapes and then blindfold children, go, ah, they're body parts. But you can make a baby, you can take an adult anything, carve it up, wet it, and it's a baby. So I don't know, I guess that rule maybe just goes for vegetables. I don't even know. I like to carve vegetables. Now, I wouldn't mind standing in a store or on the street corner. Now, all these things I'm describing are a sort of ballyhoo. That's when you make a commotion to get people to gather around, and then once they're around, you either show them a puppet show or you show them somebody who's like missing a knee or something like that. Fellas, what happened to you? I had a knee replacement. What was it replaced with? A serpent or something, or a toaster. Or they're selling you a new kind of knife, or a plane, a little toy plane that flies in circles that'll come back to you. It's made of balsa. You won't get it home. There was one thing I loved, and I don't know whether it was sold to me at a mall or some sort of fair, but it was a furry caterpillar, and it looked as if it was just wending its way in and out of the fingers of the person that, I guess they were selling it. I don't know how that worked. I wonder what their bally was. He said, "What are you doing, mister?" "I'm playing with my fuzzy worm." "Really? Can I have one?" "No. I found this fuzzy worm in the Amazon on my many journeys there." "I sure would like, can I hold him?" "No." Then eventually they make you feel like you've worn them down. They go, "All right, I'll let you in on a secret." And they show you there's a fishing filament that goes from your button, your ordinary button. You have to wear a button shirt, though. "Can I do this on my regular T-shirt?" "No." So the filament goes around your button, and then it goes to the nose of the furry worm. And then what you're doing is just kind of moving your hands away, and it looks like he's going in and out. That is not the only creature that works that way. Giraffes aren't real. And you'll notice they won't move unless you do. And that's because giraffes are made of wool, and there's an invisible string that goes to your forehead, so that's where they seem to move around like that. Ants aren't real. That's a trick of your eye. When we look at what we're thinking, what we're looking at ants, what we're really seeing is the inside of our eye, like the surface of our lens. And they're not cataracts, really. I remember one time there was people thought, "Oh, I'm seeing UFOs." And really what was happening is that there were tardigrades on their cornea, swimming around, dancing around like that. And they thought what they were seeing was in the sky. And they could only really see it when they were looking at bright objects. "If you look at me, you won't see anything. I'm not a bright object. I'm not the brightest object in the sky," they say. "Even if you lit me on fire, which I don't want that to happen, I wouldn't burn for very long." When I was young and they would sell something on TV using this ballet technique, I think one of the things they would sell was a book of mysterious happenings. And I don't know whether it was loosely based on the TV show narrated by Leonard Nimoy called, what? Or something like that it was called. But there was a whole Time Life series. And it was what they used to call science, but I guess now we would call lying or something. I don't know what it is, but it was, they were all mysteries. But the reason they were mysteries is because they weren't true or something. So it was things like, I'm not saying people don't spontaneously combust. I question how often it happens and how spontaneous. But there was this idea that people just burst into flames because they'd get hot and they're made of bacon fat or something. I don't know what it was, but remember, this was a real concern in these books and other things. Also, rainstorms that contained things that weren't raindrops, like meat. That, I believe, happened here in Kentucky. But sometimes, occasionally, and by occasionally I mean every 10,000 years, there's something will fall from the sky and it'll be unexplained. Now, a lot of we know is that tornadoes take things up like frogs or papaws, and then when the tornado's done, it's like in the cartoons when they realize they've been walking on a cloud. They plunge to the earth, and then when anything falls out of the sky, it technically becomes precipitation. So they say, you go, "Oh, it's raining frogs," or "man, hallelujah," or something. If people have been stowing away in the wheel well of a plane and they fall, one person falls, it's a tragedy. 10,000 falls, and it's a weather event. So that's, I guess, maybe that's how it happens. What if they're real tiny? I don't know how small people get. I mean, I came up thinking they get as small as your thumb or smaller. So, oh, Tom Thumb, when you do something like that and the person isn't actually the size of a thumb, you screw everything up. That's what hyperbole does. And then you've got no, all of a sudden, you've got nowhere to go. You've painted yourself into a hyperbolic corner. You go, how big was he? Size of a thumb. Well, I met a guy who was smaller than that. How's size of nothing at all? You know, you don't, where is, you can't keep, if you keep exaggerating, there's no place to go. He was big as a house. Really, though? Nowadays, that's possible because there's a lot of people go, oh, good, we could have tiny houses. Oh, that would be great. Should we put homeless in there? No, I meant for rich people. But I don't know who wants to live. It'd be great to have, everybody could have a house. This is a choice. Everybody could be fed or anything. So just remind yourself daily, we're all getting together to decide not to help people. And that's okay. Because a lot of people's jobs depend on keeping you from getting food and everything, food guards and everything like that. So that's just some people's job. We'll keep you from having a drink of water. And what would happen to their families if suddenly everybody could get water or something or food? Are you being sarcastic? Am I? Or, it depends. I mean, at the end of the day, I want to be well-liked and even by the evil people. So to do that, I have to say nothing and go around being what they call a people pleaser or sometimes they call an evil people pleaser or something like that. I try to be as obsequious as possible to everybody. I'm differential. I always try to always kick down, never up. No, that's not true. I don't kick. Here's how I get around that kicking rule. I don't kick. So it's better to kick up than down. I go, you know what? It's such a hard rule to remember. I'm just not going to kick. Is that okay? I was taking martial arts for a while, and I showed them some of my kicks, and they're going like, it's possible to defend yourself without kicking. So why don't we just take the kicks out of your special form? And I go, that's fine with me. And I go, what's the real problem? I go, well, your leg is not even really getting high enough up to hurt anyone. And I said, well, I don't want to hurt anyone. And they go, well, we need to talk this out about why you're here then. I'm going here for why most people take martial arts, for spiritual purposes, for internal spiritual redirection. And I go, well, I mean, the studio is called Death Dragon Kung Fu. So I don't know whether you're... I go, I know, I thought it was metaphorical. And they go, no, what's really like... It's combat. That's why all these weapons. I go, oh, yes, I thought they were, again, symbolic. No, no, they're for cutting folks up and everything like that. We don't do that. But that's the thing. And I think all sports were originally like that. Every time you see any sport with a ball, that was a skull. That's what I'm told. And if not of a skull, it was an organ or something. And that's how you know things are a sport or not. You go, well, does it have something in it that could have been at one time part of a person cut up? I go, golf. I go, I don't know what's golf. Were they playing with bones and eyeballs? Because if not, I don't know if that's a sport or a game. But games, now that I think back, the first board game they found, people were moving around, their little pieces were teeth. So if you were playing a game of life or something, you'd have a molar or Monopoly. And then the money was real skin. As to say, have any skin in the game? I got all the skin and I got a handful of teeth in there too, so you can play. All right, roll the gallstones. And then you move. Take out wrenched ankle. I don't play a lot of board games unless I'm trapped. I've been trapped in a long time. I wonder, you know, but I mean, like, not trapped in a bad way. I mean, with family. There's, you know, there's something to do. Oh, we're all getting a cabin. No. And we're all going to be, it's going to be fun. And, oh, I don't know. I guess it will be. It's just like being, I find that when you do that, let's say the whole family, they go, we're getting somewhere and we're getting like a cabin or a house. What happens is it's just like any other day, but now you don't know where anything is. So it's the same dynamic. You're cooking dinner and you go, I got, where are the bowls? So it's better. Sometimes it's just better to stay home and get everybody drunk rather than drive to it. Why would you go to a lake? I went to a lake with my family in the winter. So you can't, there's nothing you can do. You can't even go on the lake. It's like not cold enough to use it for anything. And it's not warm enough to use it for anything. And it's hunting season. So it's not like you can just walk around and not get shot at. So we're locked in this cabin. And it's just like, what's anybody want more hot coffee? And I go, I just threw up the last 10 cups. So I don't know. Let me wait. Let me, my stomach calm down. And anybody, you want to play cards? There's four people and four separate card games going on. So, and then, no, and I don't know, then there's no TV because we didn't want to watch TV. And then I realized that I bet this would be great. Like, what if the world ended? We just don't have, that's the one time we didn't have TV. And then we go to leave and go, what's wrong with the, why are the roads are so congested? It's so stupid of us not to have the TV on. We could have had it on while we played cards, but no. And looked for the, like, why isn't there a spatula? I do like to cook on vacation. I know this is not, I was just going to talk about Bally's and bringing people in and showing you strange sights and having your world expand and your mind blown. But now here I am talking about cooking in hotels. But I have to get this out of my system. I do enjoy traveling somewhere and getting one of those places where it feels like it's an apartment. And I'm sort of a Walter Mitty type, but instead of fantasizing that I am someone important, I like to fantasize that I am just someone else, not someone important at all. I'm just living a totally, completely different life. And here I am, I'm going to the little store next to my apartment, and I'm getting some items to make spaghetti, and then I'm coming back up to my apartment in New Jersey, and I make my spaghetti, and I watch the television, and I look out the window and I'll dream my dreams and I have a job at, and then that's always the hardest part because I don't know really what, I have no idea what people really do. Even my friends, some of them, they don't want to, I work for a company, they'll say, or something. Okay, that's good enough. Or they'll just say a name, you know. I work for Sparman's. I go, okay, cool. You like working there? Sparman's? Yeah, good. It's good. It's good. So, but I don't know what a lot of them do. Because when I interact with, I work with people, but sometimes in the arts, people have other gigs too. So you don't know what those, I don't know what those other gigs are. In Tallahassee, a lot of times it was crime was the other gig or something. You go, oh yeah, I do some thieving and some other complex things. There's always like complex crimes that you go, oh, I'd have to explain it to you for you to even see that it's thieving. But all sorts of stuff like that. I don't know what people, but, you know, some people have jobs that are can be reduced to Richard Scarry, busy, busy world kind of thing, and others don't. Other people do subtle things for money. Extortion. I don't even know. I guess that's an extorter. That doesn't have a special hat or anything. I wanted a uniform as a kid, something that I would say my profession proudly. And I don't know what that is. I didn't want law. I knew I didn't want to be a police or in the army or anything like that. I guess I was thinking more like a lot of retail had uniforms, milkman, things like that. I like the one that was sharp to me was the Maytag repairman. Now I realize he's an actor. It's Jesse White, I think. But man, that's sharp. Boy, you almost look, it almost looks like National Guard, but you fix dryers. And dryers are not hard to fix. Washing machines are a little bit bigger pain because they get, and then you get that big counterweight too. There was a while back, I'm not going to say the make of washing machines, but they said they were exploding. But what they were doing is they shook themselves apart. So if you put something in it that was water impermeable, like a big plastic comforter, or a rug, and it would get so heavy and wet. And then it's a centrifuge, like the kind they have at the fair that makes people sick. And it spins around real fast, and this machine would destroy itself, which, I mean, if that was that's a Dada art piece. I mean, people have struggled over that engineering-wise in the past. A machine that destroys itself. That's brilliant. Look at it. That's my smoking a pipe sound. And then do you repair that? My machine has completely exploded. That's good because we have some of the dryers are imploding because they get too hot and then they collapse in on themselves. And so you can tell if you look and you say, oh, my dryer's gone. And then you look more carefully and go, it's not, I don't know that it's gone, but I can see that the light is bent a little around the area where it used to be. Don't go near it. If you see light is bent like that, if you see it's all kind of twisted and concentrated, don't go near it. You know, throw something into it, like a spoon or something, and see what happens to it. I tell people that with portals all the time, because a lot of times, I go, don't put your... I see it on TV, and I think, you know, talk about canceling people. If you have a TV show where you're depicting... there's a portal, and it's so obvious, it's wavy, and the light on the other side's a different quality, and you don't stick your hand through. It's bad enough tossing an object. You could rip time. Time, if you've watched Dr. Time, is very fragile. It's almost like rice paper, and it can tear or rip or something, and then stuff comes pouring out. It's gross, but it's true. I mean, I don't like to talk to it, but if you rip time, there's what they call seepage. And this is all time traveler stuff. I don't know if I'm a real time traveler or not. You know, when I was coming up, a lot of advice I got from elders is, whatever you want to be, you can do it. You just keep saying that about yourself, and you put it out in the universe that that's what you want. And I didn't know there was a list of realistic aspirations that I had not consulted. And anything does not mean literally anything. And we'll tell that to children and go, you could be anything. No, that is not the case. You don't want to live in a world where you can be anything. Have you ever gone to a restaurant? Tell this to the child too. Have you ever gone to a restaurant and the menu, you get a menu and go, well, this is a rather large menu. And you open it up and you go, oh, what the heck? The hundreds of dishes. I can't even get through that, much less like pick something. I'm overwhelmed. First of all, it's a bad sign with a restaurant because you go, are they really good at 100? They've really got fresh ingredients ready to go for 100 different dishes. And that's no. I like to go to a place and go, what's on the menu tonight, Mrs. Barumba? And she'll say, well, tonight we have two selections. We have a vegetarian selection, and we have one that is, it's meat, but it's not just meat. You're going to have conversations about it if you order that. So, okay, well, I don't know what we're going to go with, but thank you for those two choices. But how many choices can we really handle? You know, sometimes I like to, they're false choices anyway. You're just making distinctions up between, this is our list of burgers. You know, you can get a regular burger. You can get the burger with lettuce. And you go, just make that one entry and then list the different toppings. Maybe five different burgers and they're just different names or something. The Cosmopolitan. I don't know, man. I'm not complaining. I love it. Oh, my gosh. First of all, it's good to be alive. Second of all, you know, if you're trying to convince somebody to get something, you're trying to separate them from their money, well, then there's going to be something involved that is sort of a, what we call now, spiel. What does spiel really mean? play, does it mean? Spiel balalaka, play your balalaka. What is that song? Freilich soll sein. Something like that. It's an old Yiddish song. If you know it, let's sing along. I got that because somebody got me a book one time, and it was like favorite Yiddish folk songs. And I was like, this is fantastic. I have no favorite Yiddish folk songs yet. It's like recipe books, too. People just got me the big book of Asian pickles or something like that. I love it. Asian pickles, is that any relation to Wilford Pickles? Not that I know of. Oh, my goodness, Wilford Pickles. I hope they do that. If there's ever, I don't want there to be a war. But if there was ever a voice of radio in your area, and I would love to be your Wilford Pickles. I'm like, hey, y'all, listen to this. I'm barely, look how folksy. I'm so folksy. First of all, I'm one of you. So you can tell I'm not the enemy. He just went to a fancy school and learned how to speak your language. Oh, no. Does this sound like a Russian to you? I wonder that. Careful when you're going to. If you go to school with somebody and you think maybe they're going to return to their, like, let's say they're a child of a dictator, and they're going to your school, your fancy school maybe, and they're going to return to their home country. And I don't want to say the name. Let's say I'll make something up from the Three Stooges. I can't think of one. This won't be hateful. This is not a bad thing to do, but don't teach them a slightly strange accent. So if then they try to do, this happened during the World War II, because they were like, there's a lot of Germans who speak English really well because they went to fancy school. And, you know, they went to British public school, which is private school. Everything's flipped. I said this last week. Public is private, but also everything's flipped in England, north to south. So in the south, that's where people go, oh, we speak what you're right to speak. The crazy people who speak wrong are up north. Ah! So that's what they got. Oh, we'll get somebody like, we'll get old Wilford Pickles from North England. North England. And had him come on. So there's no German speaks like that. And I don't know that anyone speaks like Hardy White. Oh, that's how you'd know it's me. Listen, don't I speak just like the people at work? At your work. See, I go to work every morning and someone goes, well, oh, hello, how are you? I have today, there's donuts. I don't have, there's a lot of them, but that's because they were stale. And I hope that's all right. We got more, but they're staler than usual. Yesterday, we had six fresh ones. I don't know what's worse. And I hope you're all good. Another thing I want to know, I want to say about the break room is I did not, I guess they spick and span very late. And so when we came in this morning, it still smelled spick and span. And I'm sorry about that. And that probably makes the donuts not quite as appetizing. But there and there, also be careful. There's little wet patches on the linoleum. And you're trying to get to your cubicle bed or your office. Maybe you have an office. I don't know how important you are. Sometimes they'll give you an office even if your job is not great because they just don't want to see you. They don't want to see you because you're sad. They go, let's pay you because if you go to this place and you go, oh, do you have somebody like edits your report? And they'll go, yeah, we do. And I go, where is your report editor? And I go, oh, she's in that closet. I go, why? Why isn't she out with the rest of the people in sales? Oh, you know, and we let her have little, she gets to have little toys and she can have all stuff and blacklight posters and whatever makes her feel, you know, like it's okay to get up every day. I wish that we all had a place where we could show up every day. I think a farm is probably best to do this. I don't want to grow things that are going to, oh, no, I don't want to. What's the easiest thing in the world to grow? Weeds? Can we live off of that? Can we, eat oak leaves or something. But it would be great to work together on something like that farm. Maybe we can also make a cartoon or something. Not a very good one. Or make a good one. It just takes us a very long time. But I would love to just be at work with you every day where it isn't awful. I don't know that I've had an office job like that. I can't imagine working on some project where we go like, oh, everybody, this is just, I love coming to work every day. I'm trying to think when I ever thought that. Maybe outdoor stuff. You know, you go, oh, I get to stand in a field and dig a ditch. And I know that doesn't sound glorious, but if you've ever worked retail, that you go, oh, if I was getting the same amount of money, yes, I could. I would stand there and pick the bark off a tree if I was getting paid the same thing, like then to work at a like small gourmet store. And it's not that I don't like people. It's just that I do like people, and they feel like they're just trying to disabuse me of that, and I don't want to be. Let me hold on to that. Let me keep loving you. Don't show up and argue against it. But there's so many occasions, there's so many things. I would like to be, is there a way, like doing a tour, you can do kind of a ballyhoo for a tour, let's say, you know, but people already want to be there, so I don't know. You know, standing in front of a historic house, you know, step right up. Like, that maybe is too much. You know, what you're about to see inside will terrify you. And I don't know if sideshows are so great anymore. I guess if people want to be in there, people, I like this, you know, subtle freakage would be nice. Where you go, I'm not even going to tell you what this person's thing is. I want you to step into this sideshow and just talk to them for 5 minutes trying to figure out what it is. And I guarantee you will leave there thinking, it's something, I can't put my finger on it. And we just, you know, a boy who is just a little too into videotapes or something like that. I don't know. It might take a while for you to figure it out. I think I could do a whole sideshow of just middle-aged men who were too nostalgic. But I would have to vary it up, too. I'd also want people who can put stuff in their nose or something. I don't know. Nothing too grotesque. What's in gosh, I can't think of anything that I'd want to see. I'd be the man whose weight fluctuates terribly over time, though. But it does dramatically. Man who can't settle on a facial hair configuration. Try seeing that. And he just said, we went in and he just sits there and rolls cigarettes and goes, oh, I should. Like this. I'll shave it into just half a mustache. Should I do that? I did work with a fellow one time and he said, this was honest to gosh, I'm one of those people I think people like me, and then when they don't, sometimes I'm stunned. Because I think, what actually happened? I thought we were all a big family. I'm the person at work who thinks we all get along. But this fella said to me, so what's the deal with the beard? Do you have one or not? I go, you know, I don't know. I mean, the thing with the beard, listen, I didn't say this to him, but I got bad skin. So I grow a beard, and then it you know, it get a little itch terrible or something, and I'll shave. But then when I shave, I get these huge welts. And it's, you know, so I don't know what to do. And I guess, I could shave and then use a lot of foundation, or I could keep the beard. And I don't know, man. You tell me. Because you have to look at me, and apparently it's bothering you. So, I wouldn't mind that. I guess that's what a uniform is. So, when they give you rules at work, you bristle. But on the other hand, it's like, well, that's, you know, you got to look at me. If you want to see me wear some kind of vest that's not flattering, if that makes you feel like we're all doing a good job, so be it. I just as soon wear a blazer. I wouldn't mind. You know who ought to have blazers is like hardware, those home hardware stores. All those people are like in vests. Like, you don't work. You're no more likely to wear a vest when you're doing construction than a blazer. It's a store, you know? So just wear the, I think a blazer would look sharp. You can still do stuff in it, but you're not, real construction workers, you're not going to pass for that anyway. So, and nobody just wears a, I can't think of any context where just somebody has a vest like, I guess if they host a children's show, maybe, I don't even know. But, and then you say, well, I'm keeping all my, keep things in it, like my badge and measuring tape. And imagine if you had a good, a nice quality jacket with patch pockets, really big ones, like Captain Kangaroo. Keep all sorts of things in there. You wouldn't even have to direct people to the screw aisle. People go, where's the screw aisle? You go, what size do you need? It's like quarter inch sheet metal, bang, got it in your pocket already. You know, you might want to do that. When people get new jobs, they'll call me sometimes and say, Hardy, what could I be doing? What could I do that make me seem gung-ho and make all the employees hate me? Because I'm trying too hard. I want them to call me a try-hard at work. Okay, let me think what I could do. You could make theme, you could suggest stuff everybody could do as a team, like to management when there's meetings. You could tell, you know, it'd be fun if we all had a day where we wore pirate hats or something. And then we could have, say, oh, are you going to do some yar work or something like that?
All right, that sounds like a good idea. Next Monday is pirate, team pirate day.
No, you don't want that. Just try to, I don't know what it is. I'm so disenchanted. I thought that money would work out as a great concept, but it's really hurting people. No, I never did. When they did they ask you? They did ask me, and I guess I wasn't paying attention. And this was years and years ago, but I don't know. I don't remember a lot of things. How did things used to be? Where? That's the thing. Oh, it's a big, crazy earth. I spent a lot of it underground in a cave community where we did things much, much differently. And to be honest, we went back about how we did things. Did people have possessions? Yes. Did they own property? Well, they didn't own real estate because it's a cave. It's very difficult because a lot of times you got to pass through one person's cave to get to the other. So people had privacy and everything like that, but they didn't necessarily own the caves. Did they have things? Oh, yes, because some people like a lot of stuff. Some people don't. You know, like this, I'm watching the new Jack Reacher. He doesn't like, I don't want anything because I got to go around killing people and everything. So I like to travel light. But some people like to have a bunch of stuff with them. You know, can't go anywhere without tons and tons of stuff. I'm like that a little bit. I remember one year we drove up for the FMU marathon. And I had several suitcases and backpacks full of anything that you could possibly imagine. I had lockpick kits. I had all sorts of safety, everything that could possibly go wrong. It was survivalist. I didn't know what I thought was going to happen. I always think, like, I'm driving between here and New Jersey. What if it's just, I reach somewhere in West Virginia, I can't get any further. And I just have to make do. And I live by a drainage ditch or something. So if I don't have a tent, at least I got to have stuff where I could build a house. What I'll usually take with me are plans for 1920s Sears Craftsman houses. And then a lot of times I can just get the materials just by gathering things. There's trees. I mill my own wood. Just whittling. And so doesn't it take a long time? What am I going to do with my time? I'm stuck here. I never got to New Jersey. What am I going to do with my days besides build my house? Well, where are you going to live in while you build your house? You need to come with me next time. I didn't even think about that. I guess a tent. I guess that's what the tent is for. I thought I was being... I could sleep in my old burned out car that didn't make it. That'd be fine. I'm going to turn that into something Wonderful. The car is going to be the beginning of the home, but then after in a few years, it's going to have so many add-ons you won't even recognize it. It's just going to have additions after additions, and it'll look like a Franken home, but it's going to be lovely. It'll be mine. And it's wonderful to design your own kind of space. What kind of space would you design, Hardy, for yourself if you're making a house from scratch? How scratch are we making it? Because when I think that, I think from just powder and water. But I guess just building it. What would I think some of the features, I would love it was confusing. I like to be in houses where I don't know where I go. Where did I come in? I don't even know where we came in. Where, you know, some rooms are identical, where you have to pass through rooms to get to other ones. And I've been in houses like that, but where they were really ridiculously designed. It's great. Maybe somebody who built it designed, like they were going to design their own house, and they just didn't consider, you know. There was, actually, the famous architect, Addison Meisner, in South Florida, I believe, built a house, and the staircase is outside. Now, whether he forgot and had to do that afterwards, who knows? Or whether he was like, well, maybe another family lives on the second floor. But I think it was like, it probably was like, you know how you're working on something great and you're drinking wine while you're doing it? And then there's a point at which perhaps where you go, that's great, I'm done. And you forgot the staircase. So you just want to time it. Maybe before you put it in the tube and send it to Mr. Brady, you should, you know, wake up in the morning, sober, look at it. I could do that. I should do that with the radio shows. No, I do my radio. My radio shows are done so sober that sometimes I'm afraid that, you know, that's a problem. I say, you seem, your feet seem so grounded. And I go, I know, but I think there's enough wrong with my brain that that's okay, that that's not bad. Because I take flights of fancy. I realize that. Maybe I don't stay on the same subject. Isn't that wonderful, though? Who would? And if somebody was trying to hammer some point into me, I would scream bloody murder. And the same thing is when it's done figuratively. I say, what is it? Why are you trying so badly to convince me? What are you trying to sell me? Now, maybe I make too big a deal about not selling you anything, or not even trying to convince you. But I do think it's important. And I think that I don't really even want to convince you to like me necessarily. I would say, though, genuinely show me, I do believe in showing human beings and yourself honor and dignity. I believe that. You know, I'll just say, as much as you would other people. But I don't really require anything from you. I'm trying to think, so nothing really. I would like you to feel positive about the radio station because it depends on listener support. I don't have any thing I'm doing right now. You know, when people went on talk shows and go, you have a movie or TV show out or something or a brand of cereal? Not right now, Johnny. I just came by because apparently one of your guests couldn't make it. And that's where I am perpetually in my career. So I have no need for reputation or anything like that. So you don't wonder why I'm speaking to you at all. Maybe it's a ego, you know, I won't be thought to be interesting or entertaining or have a skill. And I'll tell you what, let's say, okay, now I'm about to make it patently evident that I have no skill and that I'm not entertaining and I don't know what I'm doing and that I can't deserve or expect. Oh, Jesus, now I'm coughing. Any accolade, I'm going to have a sip of something. See how awful and unprofessional this is? How could I possibly have any kind of good feelings about that or pride? So that's out of the mix. So what are you doing listening to this, and what am I doing speaking to you? This is a bally for absurdity. Listen, If I were standing on a street corner, if I was standing in a carnival, I would be speaking loudly and I would be trying to attract your attention. I would try to direct you to the strange world that I want you to pay to see. Now, there's no world that I want you to pay to see. But I do want to direct your attention to a very strange world, the one that you are in. It is mysterious. It is dangerous. It is attractive. Its mystery is alluring. You are repulsed and drawn to it at the same time, much the way you are sideshow attractions. It's scary and alluring. It's magic. It's nightmares, but it's also dreams and fantasies. That's what I'm calling you towards. See, this is a ballet. There is a door open before you. And all the time leading up to this was to get you to stay here in the presence of my voice so I could tell you about the real reason that I'm calling you in, that I'm inviting you to be a witness. I'm inviting you to open your eyes and see the world as it really is. You may no longer hide in your safe and serene space, far away from the dark, twisted, mysterious mazes of confusion that lie in this great universe that we are floating in. Oh, let us look, let us dare open our eyes, let us pull the covers off our heads and confront the strange sounds, the stranger visions, the stranger yet feelings. But they compel us forward. Now you can't shut your eyes. Show me, Hardy White. What are you showing me? Oh, I'm showing you something supremely strange, and you're in it. You are this show. You and everything around you, myself included. Oh, I may sound like a carnival barker to you, or I may sound like a friend, or I may sound like a preacher, or I may sound like a newsman, or I may sound like someone on radio who's trying to convince you to do something political, to get mad, or to get sad, or to buy something. But wouldn't it be stranger and weirder still if it were none of those things? If it were something that were subversive? Lots of things are subversive. Everybody wants me to be, different. If you want to be truly different, you will come and see this strange sideshow. It's the Grove. It's opening your eyes to a strange reality. Now, what you may see is nothing. You may walk through these curtains right now, terrified, trying to keep your eyes open, knees shaking, apprehensive. And then you may gaze into the dark space before you where the show is supposed to be, and yet you may see nothing. And then I tell you, you are that performer. And you say, I'm the performer, but I see nothing. And then the truth of it washes over you. I am a dimensional being. I am a freak. I am in a strange world. I am a freak. I am alive. I am a freak. I'm scared. Now I'm happy. I'm a freak. I'm asleep. Now I'm awake. Now I'm hungry. Now I'm mad. Now I'm not mad. I'm a freak. I love it. I don't love it. I love me. I don't love me. Freak. 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 And you will also find that when you step even farther behind the stage, behind the stage. There are tables, and all the freaks there are having, they're having lunch, they're having dinner together. And they're invisible, too.
I don't see anything. I don't see any of this.
You don't? You know what? I'm going to step away in a little bit. I'm going to walk away from this show, and I'm going to leave it to you. You got your own carnival. You got your own sideshow. You got your own circus. You got your own world. I'm leaving you your own world. And you're the star. And you're doing the ballet. And you're a cookie. You're going to cook for everybody. And what else? You're going to entertain them. You're going to make them sad. You're going to take care of people. People are going to take care of you. And you think, we all seem helpless, but there's no more secure feeling I get than when I'm on this circus train with y'all. Oh, yeah. I feel like if there were somebody who knew the power of your love and acceptance, my friend, listener, I'm not speaking in the abstract. I'm speaking to you who listen to this radio show. If somebody knew that power, boy, they'd try to do something. They'd try to take it and sell it back. If they knew what it did to me, at least. If they knew the satisfaction and the joy and the depth of experience that your attention or love gives me, oh, they'd put it in the most secure cage they could. Put a lock on it. Separate me by miles. Tell me all the things that I have to do, either the labor or the resources that I have to acquire to get this back. Otherwise, that feeling will be taken from me. I want access to it. Here's what's going on, and this is why I'm giving you the circus. I'm ripping the curtain away. I'm ripping the curtain away from it all. I'm going to let all the secrets out. No longer are we going to fool people. The biggest surprise, the thing that will truly blow their minds, is when I take away the magic tricks, when I pull the curtain away, where everybody has the stark light of day shine on them, illuminate them, bring them to truth. Then you think, once the tricks are gone, it won't work the same. It won't look like the boy turns into a gorilla. No. But guess what? The gorilla turned into a boy. Sort of. Lots of weird things have happened. It requires open eyes. No ticket, no money, nothing. Just your attention. Just your curiosity. Just your willingness. That's all I want or ask for. That's all you need to get into this show. Oh, I'm glad you are here. You are the lucky ones. You are the fortunate ones. Nobody else can replace you here today. You were fated to be here hearing this. You were fated to be here to gain this knowledge. You alone, free. You are free, and this is free to you. Well, I don't need things that are free. You only need things that are free, or should be. I have been listening to your radio show now, sir, for a good 53 and a half minutes or more or less. Well, we could argue that, or more. Now it's more. But before that, I was not thinking about these things, and I believe that once it's over, I will again not be thinking about things. And I will say to this to you, once you have tasted some things, the literal taste may not linger, but the memory of the feeling of the taste were. It's like a dream. When you're in a dream, you don't always know that you're looking at something until you in the dream think, that's a dog. Then it's a dog. Before that, it wasn't. It wasn't anything. It wasn't anything until you said, I think that's a dog. Then you name it. Then you claim it. Then you blame it. And then you same it. And that's the order that you do it in. Write all that down.
I'm writing it down as fast as you could talk, Hardy.
Not fast enough, because you cannot write it down fast enough, because by the time you get it down, it's wrong again. That's how quickly everything is happening. I don't offer advice. Sometimes I have advice. If you come by, it's like ribbon candy in a dish or something, or all sorts. If it's there when you're here, so be it. I don't go searching you out. I got some all sorts. I'm going to call you. No. If you're at my house and I happen to have gotten some, you're going to have some. Otherwise, no. Gosh, I'm sitting here now. I've got my hands clasped, and I'm thinking to myself, that was easier to do before I had arthritis. And now I'm so, oh, but can't get them apart. That's the thing. My knuckles are so swollen, I don't even need those finger handcuffs anymore. Don't need them anymore. My fingers can now just get naturally stuck together because of their swollen and wonderfully misshapen. It gives me an idea for some sort of interlocking toy idea. Can you imagine that? I was looking at my arthritic hands, trying to get them out of a prayer configuration, and I realized if I could have little plastic arthritic hands, they could snap together, and I could make a sort of building toy mechanism with them, like Legos, but they're crippled hands. Yes, that'd be... There was a time when that is something that people might have thought or done. I don't know that they do that now. So much has changed. Not necessarily bad, but we add more bad stuff all the time in case any of it gets corrected. Because the universe has to be balanced. And so there has to be a certain amount of poop smeared on everything, I think, to provide contrast. And I was hoping that wasn't the case. But just as I go on and on, I think, well, why do people keep purposely ruining good things? Unless there's some deep mystical reason. There must be. Otherwise, why would you want things to hurt more, feel worse? Why would you want to be more fearful or more angry? Right? I don't understand. It smells too good in here. You know, somebody have some gas. Well, no, I don't know. Don't. Can we just enjoy it? Ugh. The nice smell is cloying. Is that, oh, this is saccharine sweet emotions here. I go, oh, you know, I might maybe rather have that than something that tastes like shaved metal or something, you know. If someone said to me, you want marzipan or moldy bitter cheese rind? I'd say, well, marzipan or something like that. It's often... people often reject things, not realizing that it's probably, you know, better than the alternative. Not even better than nothing, but better than what you would get if you didn't get that. And I think a lot of life is like that. So would you like a cheese sandwich or a poke in the eye? Well, I mean, when you put cheese is bad. A lot of people don't eat cheese. Do you want a single piece of rice or a poke in the eye? I will take the single piece of rice. Is it cooked? No, it's not cooked. Well, then poke me in the eye, because, man, what a life. That's how I feel sometimes. Not when I'm with you. You make it all better. You're listening to Miracle Nutrition on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope 91.9 in Rockland County and New York City, New York, and online at WFMU.org. Worldwide, everywhere, WFMU. Oh! And this has been Miracle Nutrition, which is a part of that thing, and a part that is so grateful for you. If you are listening now from your home or your office or your work or from the bottom of the ocean, I want to tell you that I am so grateful and thankful, and I want you to just keep listening. What a marvelous radio station this is. It has so much to offer. Go ahead and take, you can just take it. It's like when you rob somebody, you can just throw away the stuff that you don't need in the dumpster on your way out. Right? What's this? Throw away the garment bag. Keep the cannoli. All right? Oh, I'm so glad to be with you, my friends, and I will see you again next week.
Twins know it's ebony. England is my agony. 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 Twins know it's ebony.
Thank you.